Welcome back to Mission Accomplished. My name is Michelle.
I'm Garrett, and you're probably wondering why I'm on this side today. Yes, it feels very strange. Well, it's because
we wanted to snuggle.
Yes, and we have our very first in-person guest with us. Drum roll, everybody, for our super cool, our super cool guest, Tina.
Hi, everybody.
Wow.
How's it going?
This is so crazy.
So for those of you who don't know you, which is crazy if they don't.
I am Christina, also known as Tina, also known as T and Tina, maybe Bo Tina. Some people, Quarantina, also T, if you want to make it really short. to some others, Chris? Not so much, though.
Does Meg call you Chris?
Meg is the only person that calls me Meg. Chris.
I wanted to give you orange today as your backdrop. Orange
is my favorite color. Listen, so you guys, I have an orange cable even. Yeah. Look at this.
I made sure of that.
Like, yeah. I feel so welcomed right now. Also, like, great job on the sound setup. Like,
You're the first person we've seen since March.
I know. So. And I'm also like the one that's going to admire this the most, I feel like, because I do this for a living. Like,
yeah.
I do sound.
Okay. Let me give Christina a little bit of an introduction, and I want you to introduce yourself as well. So Christina is one of our really, really good friends. I've known Tina for 3 years now.
Yeah. I've known her since college.
Yeah. So a while.
Not that old.
A hot second, if you will. One hot second.
We're so excited to have Christina on today because if you guys have been following us on Twitch and joining in for all the fun over there, if you're not, what are you doing? You're crazy. Come join. You might recognize Christina's voice. Christina is a member of Alpha Team Bravo.
Heck yeah.
And is known for her wild T in Tina antics.
Yeah, I usually sound something like this. Like, oh, guys, everything's, oh, God, oh, oh. Everything's fine. I swear, this is fine.
Oh my goodness.
I'm intentionally peeking because that's usually how I sound in the broadcast. So I apologize for that.
But we also wanted Christina here because Christina, outside of Twitch, has a very, very cool job. And a job that I think needs to be highlighted more in our industry. A lot of you guys who watch our podcast are interested in entertainment. And Christina, in many ways, I think, is among the most accomplished of our friends. While she might be, you know, having a wild and fun time on Twitch, she is also the sound mixer and editor for some of the biggest Hollywood films ever.
Sort of. It sounds pretty cool. I like to tell people, explaining my job, I'm practically Cameron Diaz from The Holiday. Because I got blonde hair, and
is she
a
sound mixer in that movie?
Is this the best analogy that you have?
No, it's not. I have a better one, and it deals with cookies.
So today's podcast, very similar to our streams, is going to be probably very chaotic and a different change of pace from the normal podcast.
Is it? Oh, I thought you were going to say from the streaming. I was like, is it?
Yes. So first of all, we're going to be talking about how sound impacts a lot of your favorite films, TV shows, and other types of media, and the importance of sound. I mean, you are listening to this podcast. All right.
You are welcome.
I want to just mention something first.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know what a sound designer or mixer or editor does, could you explain that role on a film?
Yeah. So there's a couple different roles in the production side of things and the post-production side of things. On a production side, the person's job as a sound mixer or a sound recordist, more specifically, is the one that has kind of like the setup that we have here for the podcast. They have different microphones, and their primary job is not to capture just all the sounds happening on a set. It's very specific to getting the cleanest dialogue that you possibly can. Because you're going to be in different situations and scenarios where, say it's like there's a refrigerator. You can usually unplug something like that, but it's about trying to get the cleanest dialogue on set so that you don't have to get ADR later.
Yeah, so to clarify for anyone who doesn't know the difference between production and post-production, this is the person who might be holding a boom pole during actual filming, when the cameras are rolling, during that part of the movie-making process.
It's that guy in Star Wars. He unfortunately just recently passed away.
The short shorts guy?
Yeah, yeah, he unfortunately passed away this year. Yeah, he's Damn. He had a really great 2020, stance. Man. I know, dude. It's taking all the good ones. Anyway, not to be depressing, but the boom operator for sure on set. It's great. It's really fun. I love doing it. You get a good workout, you know, if you can see my arms here.
You have great arms.
You did sound recording on our Black Widow sketch.
Yeah.
You were there on set.
Not just Black Widow sketch. Almost every...
Like pretty much everything
we've done. Big narrative project that we've
all
done.
All of MK Ultra season one, the musical... Mm-hmm. You did the impossible task of recording sound on that. That was really fun.
I didn't know anything about this, too. I usually get a call from Michelle like a couple days before a big shoot like that. And she's hey, got this thing going. So we need to record like a whole tap dance number. Also, we need to have people singing and they need to have wires in their ears, but we can't see it. So like, do you have something like that?
Well, yeah, let's talk about that, actually, because sound recording on the musical was, I think, far more complicated than people think it was. Those tap sounds that you hear during the tap number were live recorded tap sounds.
The real tap sounds that you guys
made.
But
when we were recording, we had to film, we had to record the tap sounds separately and on its own track so that it wasn't like you hear the track of the music playing in the background. Because when you're editing, you want to be able to isolate all those different sounds.
Basically, yeah, if we were recording the track that was playing in the background would bleed into the tap sound. Yeah. So we had to figure out a way.
So we got these earpieces.
Yeah.
These highly specialized earpieces that actually Taylor Swift uses these on her music videos.
She sure does. Exact ones.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Hers are probably more expensive than the ones we use. But
no,
basically,
like ones she put in her ears.
They were in her ear hole.
Oh, yes. I don't want to think about this.
Sorry.
But basically, so you put this little earpiece in. If you guys saw my, if you saw my challenge accepted video about becoming a host, you saw the little earpiece that I put in. We put something similar in so that
it was the exact
the
same
actors
one.
Can hear the music. And that music is not picked up by Christina's microphone, but then we tap out the dance so she gets the clean tap sounds.
Yeah.
Well, the problem was actually we only had a few of those. And so most of the dancers were not even dancing to the music. They were trying to dance to they were thinking about
we
the song
had
in
two.
Their head.
So really and there was them. Eight dancers. Yeah.
So everyone was trying to dance in sync with everyone else without hearing any music. And I was so impressed.
We didn't do that.
We rotated in groups. You were
We didn't just rotate. I had
there.
To
I
improvise.
Just...
So oh, what I right, did, right, I had right, to right. improvise, and I actually took the lav. So like I had Michelle a lavalier is something like a small little microphone you usually put like on somebody's shirt. And what I did was I took that, reversed engineered it in a way. That sounds way too complicated. But then I sent out four or five people ended up having separate microphones that turned into headphones. So that's how you guys were able to do it.
Oh, so you were. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't
And then I
that.
Had, I think I still had two earbuds. So
it
I was able to get most of them.
See, Christina was just running around.
Like sound MacGyvering.
Like,
yeah,
think,
that's
you
really
think
what
that
it is.
It's not going to be that complicated, but all of the elements of sound on that, I mean, you guys saw in our behind the scenes on YouTube Rewind 2019, the musical, like the whole songwriting process, we recorded every single person who you see in that musical had a recording session with our composer, Alex Winkler, to record all of their parts of the vocals, all the harmonies, everything.
It's about separating all the elements, all the layers, so that you have as much control as humanly possible in the post-process. So, like, that's a whole other world, and that's the one I typically live in.
Yeah, so Alex is recording all these voices, and then on set, Christina is capturing a lot of those live sounds like the taps and whatnot. So it's very complicated. Yeah. And in Black Widow especially,
that's just fun.
Black Widow is interesting too because a lot of times, I mean, you have to improvise because you can't put a lav on everybody.
Sure.
For example, like my wardrobe for that was very skin tight. So if I was wearing a mic, it would be visible. And We're literally doing stunts. So we're flying all around the room.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, you don't want to wear a mic because that could damage the equipment.
Yeah.
Or hurt somebody.
Yeah. It's been really interesting shooting MKUltra specifically because it is such a stunt focused series, and not a lot of projects people work on. It's usually like, you know, two heads talking, you know, it's a walk and talk. That's what we typically call it. And it's just two people in a room, kind of like a podcast, you know, and they're just chatting away and it's easy to capture the audio. But with stunts, you still want to get those what we call efforts in the post world, which is just the you know, those sounds,
because like
all those grunts as you guys are kind of doing these punches, because the punches I replace, you know, that's something I'll do in post. But what you guys do is make these vocals, and it's really hard to emulate that in a post situation when you're in an ADR.
You can't really like fake it.
Except like Hugh Jackman does a great job.
Oh, I love that video of Hugh Jackman doing ADR during Wolverine.
Like,
an amazing video. We can cut away to that.
Yeah.
So we have, so that is like the sound recording aspect.
Yes.
Now let's talk about the other components that you also do. Let's talk about designing.
Okay. Cool.
So this is after we finish filming the video or the movie, whatever it is, and you get a bunch of files from set. You get the final edit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Like, how much does sound impact a piece of media?
So, you know what's really fun is I take the time on set and try and stay as organized as humanly possible. I have every single take, every single scene and section, whatever it is. And then the editor takes it all and then chops it up. Because that's just how you do it. That's, you know, you got to chop it all up and then they hand it right back to me. And I'm like, great. Okay. So I have to go and take all these chopped up pieces and smooth them out and then pick what's the best mic angle that I had. Because the editor doesn't really know. And some post sound people don't. But because I'm on set for these, it's like I know exactly what I'm looking at because it was something I did. And so I have to like take all of that, clean it up, and then I basically at that point start designing the world around them. So say for example, the Black Widow specifically, that was a little more challenging because it's such a open space. It's such a dead space. There's nothing visually to help, give you the information that you need in that room other than there's air, there's room tone, and there's white noise. So it's like, how do I make that interesting? How do I make, you know, in those moments of silence when nothing else is happening, I can still tell a story. There can still be an arc.
For the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to note is that when we choose crew members to work with, or why we always work with the same people, is because the people that we've found are all storytellers. And even down to Christina, who at first you would just think, oh, you're just replacing, oh, if a scene's happening in a park, we need to throw some dog barks, some kids playing, some whatever. But what we love about working with our crew members, specifically Christina, is that she is a storyteller. So even with what you would think would just be mundane, monotonous sounds, she's using those to tell a story. Using every element of a film, from music to sound to wardrobe, colors in a frame, all to tell a story. And that's what I think I love working with you so much. And to jump off of that, something that I find that we just do for fun. And we talked about this on the stream.
It's pretty great.
But we have a hidden sound.
Yes.
In every project that we do together, Tina slips in the sound effect. And everything. And I'm just, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So as Garrett mentioned earlier, we knew each other from college. And one of the first projects we worked on was a short film called Milkman. And it's a great little story. It's his like last delivery day before he's about to retire, before he accidentally gives everyone a really bad batch of milk and they start dying. And there was a sound that I wanted to add. I don't know why, but I felt like it needed it. There's somebody standing in a doorway and they're just like waving like this. And this is something like, you don't hear anything when I do that, right?
Wait, what's the sound of this?
What is this? what is this? But because it's a comedy, it was so like over the top. I wanted a sound for that. And so I was like, yo, let's put a cowbell in here. And since then,
a cowbell as someone's waving.
Yeah, so it's go ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. And like people associate, like that makes sense to people, which is hilarious to me. So because of that, like, it just, it works so well. And we're like, why don't we just put this in every single project? Like, this is just like a you and me thing. Like,
a
me
secret
and Garrett.
Sound.
It's mm-hmm. so great.
And, yeah. and most of the time, only we know about it and we crack ourselves up. About every oh, it's project, great. We're like, okay, where are we going to put the cowbell this time? So, if you want to go back and yeah. try to, some of our moderators on Twitch have been going back and trying to find all of the all of the times the
they
cowbell
found a
was
good
used.
Chunk of them. They did. But not all of them.
But not
so
all of them.
Let's it's give fun. An example. Yeah. Where in whose heist is it anyway? Our
no, no.
black.
No, we're
it.
Not telling you
oh.
nothing.
Whoever, somebody in the comments, tell us where you think the time code in Whose Heist Is It Anyway? Tell us where yeah. the cowbell is. Whoever figures it out first, we'll figure out something.
Yeah.
We'll shout you out if we remember in the next
podcast. Yeah, I will say that there's a term for this. It's called an Easter egg. And that's the only hint I'll give you, as in that's not a hint at all, that's just a fun fact. You know, fun fact. Do a little fun fact thing.
Okay,
so normally on a film the same person who's recording the sound isn't also editing the sound
no.
and mixing
right.
the sound. Those are
usually
all different jobs.
It's like different people who are there on set, and then it goes to a post-production house mm-hmm. of some sort
but
to be handled
for us. Tina just does all of it.
Yeah, Tina. Tina.
So, yeah. So I didn't do this one entirely by myself.
Oh, right. You had help on this
I
one.
I did, yeah. So I
in
actually...
In
yes,
post, in post.
In post. I
and
have,
to clarify, we're talking about Black Widow.
We're talking about Black Widow. I had help with Black Widow with one of my business partners, actually. I work for... a post sound company called Cabin 21 Sound, and I mix movie trailers for a living, just to clarify what that is.
Okay, well, can you see some of the trailers?
Yes, let me actually pull up my website because I don't remember all of them.
Oh.
My resume's too
let me
long.
Just, guys, they are. Oh my God.
My resume's too long.
Walls, what is my name? Hold on. What have I worked on?
So yeah, I think that people don't, in general, understand or appreciate how much those little sounds that you add in and smooth out really bring you to the space of something. Because when you're on set filming, like for example, Black Widow, we're in this empty white and black room. And if we didn't have any sounds to buffer or, as you said, fill out that story, it would have felt completely flat. Also, people don't realize that when you, like you said before, when you punch someone or when you throw them to the ground, there's not really that much noise that happens when you punch somebody or fake it on set for stunts. So all of that.
Or
every
real life.
Punch,
in real life, there's no
saying.
Sounds.
It's really like meaty, you know, like that's it. And it's crazy how it's so like it's so layered. Like I mm-hmm. if we're let's just say a punch, you know, like that's not really exciting. But if I go, whoosh, there's something that, mm-hmm. you know, like. Whoosh, it,
yeah,
it's adding those layers of that whoosh.
Like a little bit of like,
oh,
yeah.
And we do
wind.
It again, and I'll add the grunt.
Yeah, ready? 3, 2, 1. Boom! Look at that. That's
Whoa.
This is live
sound design.
Sound design.
So tell us some of these
yes.
big movies you have gotten to work on.
I work for a post sound company called Cabin 21 Sound, and we do the marketing campaigns for the trailers. So for the trailers for big Paramount movies. So I'm not actually working on those films, to clarify. But
I think you are.
I mean, sure.
You're doing the trailers, which in some cases are the most epic part of the
movie. Well, they're the online trailers and then like the TV. So I'm mixing stuff for international releases. So like, or if you listen to something on your phone or on the radio, like that's what I'm doing. So like one film, I will mix with a team of people about 300 different spots. So I'm not mixing one
wow.
trailer. I'm mixing... you know, like 100-ish spots for one movie.
Because you think about like the 10-second ad versus the 15-second ad,
yes.
Facebook
the Instagram
campaign.
Version versus
yes.
the Twitter
version. And so we
version.
Do all wow. of those. So yeah. some of the movies I've gotten a chance to work on during my time at Cabin 21, it's amazing. One of the first ones I did was being a part of the team for A Quiet Place.
Oh, that's the one I'm most proud of you
yeah.
for, because A Quiet Place is a movie about sound.
I know. And
how
I
cool
got to
that?
See that at Paramount, like on the lot
wow.
when it came out and like, woo.
That's so dope.
Yeah. I got to work on that. I got to work on other movies like Mission Impossible Fallout. Book Club, Action Point, Sherlock Gnomes. So it's like a whole wide variety. Bumblebee, Instant Family, What Men Want.
Dora.
Yeah, Dora, Rhythm Section. I did some stuff for Terminator and Rocket Man as well. Jesus. So those are just like... Christ. A couple movies. I couldn't remember what they were because it's just
because there's so much happens
and like you just shut down.
And then
down.
Michelle Carre's YouTube channel.
And then Michelle Carre's YouTube channel. But with that, I also own my own post sound company, and I that's where I find like all the passionate projects that I do. Like when I work with you guys, like that brings so much joy because whenever I'm working with Cabin 21. That is very specific to one type of content. It is marketing content. I've worked on some other projects with them, but I do have my own post sound company, and we work very specifically on narrative pieces, and we work with people who like we, it's like glorified freelance work. We just make it sound cooler. That's mostly what it is. So for us, working on a project like Black Widow, I would have been doing that anyway with you guys freelancing kind of on the side. And then I was like, why don't I just have my buddy, you know, it's a glorified freelance project and we have our own company called Paper Mountain Post. And we do all sorts of post sound stuff too. So he did like some of the Foley, he did, background sounds.
What's Foley?
Oh, everyone knows what Foley
is. That's my favorite thing.
Everyone loves Foley. It is the, you know, these sounds of like someone moving around.
So like, I think
all the footsteps.
What do people traditionally think of when they...
That
Foley.
That technically is Foley.
So Foley is on like a big movie. They go in a room, a Foley room. Explain.
Yeah. So on a bigger movie, or literally any movie, honestly, there will be a Foley artist and a engineer. So the Foley artist will go into a room and they'll see, okay, there's a horse in a shot. Well, how do I make something sound like a horse? And they'll get some coconuts and go ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Kind of like Holy Grail.
Yeah, Monty Python with the coconut.
There is a book called The Foley Grail, which is...
Is it really?
There is. Wow. I have it. It's great.
Oh,
amazing.
My God.
Yes, but it's all about capturing the sounds that you see on the screen that is very realistic versus sound design that is... In the easiest sense to explain it, I mean, that is what Ben Burtt did in Star Wars. He created the sounds of the lightsabers, of the little pew-pew guns. And that, he just went up to a, it's like, what was it? It was just like a...
Was it like an electric wire?
It was an electric wire, thin metal electric wire, and he just like hit a quarter off of it and goes, pew! It's really cool.
And then modified it a little bit. And it became that classic...
Like and then you take like, it really is taking a sample of a sound and then changing it and altering it so much to trick somebody into believing that what they're hearing is actually what's happening on screen. So one example of that, it's a little more of a Foley thing, but someone breaks their arm.
Oh, classic.
Classic. And so what do you do for that? We don't have a lot of arms that we can break in case we mess up the take. You know, it sounds very different. So you grab, go to your local grocery store and grab some celery and just get a little snappy boy.
Literally every time a bone breaks, you hear in a film, it is always celery.
Or pumpkin is another one.
Oh, I didn't know pumpkin was in that.
Pumpkin,
mix.
Sometimes carrots can be used. Yeah, pumpkin, it's great because it gets a little more of that like kind of sound.
So just always a vegetable.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. I didn't know
that. Isn't that gross?
I'm learning.
That's gross.
That was great. I love that.
I do a lot of sound design actually with my voice too. I have a friend of ours, Julian Terry. He does a lot of horror shorts. I've been doing a lot of horror shorts. They're very fun because they're very challenging and it's completely relies on sound. And so every time there's the big monster, the big scare, I'm the one designing the sounds for it with my vocals. There's one sound in particular that like he loves that I do. I'm going to do it.
Oh, my God.
But just know that I can only do it so many times now because it's starting to like hurt my vocal cords.
Is this about to be loud?
Wow.
I'm going to back up a little bit from it.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you ready?
Wow.
So.
I love this kind of shit.
I think Silas just had like a heart attack.
So
upstairs.
That is that's one of those things that I do. It's pretty fun. So
okay, so
yeah, so that's just kind of part, and I'll like alter that a little bit, do some sound design. It's fun.
So
moving on. It's just taking sound to something.
Everyone listening to this podcast just broke their eardrums.
I know.
What I would like to do is now. Mm-hmm. So the reason why Christina is on this podcast to begin with is because of her journey doing all of these jobs. And what I think is most impressive is the amount of time it took you to get to where you are now is a very short amount of time. And you might think it's longer, but it really is truly to get to where you are doing the things you're doing from college to now wasn't much. And I kind of want to use this as a way to help anyone who is listening or watching. You know, if you're about to leave college and you're trying to get into a field, something like this or any really anything, it doesn't even have to be film. Maybe steps that you took or advice that you could give that got you what do you think got you to where you are? Like, what things did you do that you think, oh, that got me an edge, and it was because of that relationship I made or because of that extra step that I took?
Yeah.
Do you have anything like that? Like, or maybe let's just talk about what that journey was for you. So let's say you graduate college, you have your degree.
Yeah.
What did
you
do?
I had a really cool piece of paper, and I didn't know what to do with it. So
I think it's a common problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think I was in a really unique position because I started my journey even well before I graduated college. So my sophomore year, wow, that was okay. That was a minute ago. Woo. My sophomore year of college during the summertime, there was a group of filmmakers from our school who were shooting their very first feature film in Wyoming, and they needed, you know, like assistants and PAs to work on it, a production assistant. And I didn't know much still. I was kind of like new to the whole filmmaking process, and I was like, pick me, like I'll go. And they ended up making me the art director for that film. Now, let me tell you something, guys. Let me learn you something. I don't know anything about art direction. I appreciate everyone that does it, but I don't know anything. So,
how did art turn out on that project?
Great.
Look good.
We were outside most of the time. The art was the trees.
This is Madeline's.
This is
feature.
I know. Yeah. This is Mark and Madeline.
Madeline and Mark, the director and
Madeline was DP. Yeah, director and DP.
Director DP.
Yeah.
Both of them work on the channel now.
They do. It's really great. So they were shooting their very first feature film, and I took a role that I knew nothing about, but I put 110% into it as much as I could. I was like, I'll do the thing, whatever you need. And I met this guy, Kyle, who did the production sound, and he was just like super chill dude. And I'm like, God, that guy is just cool. Like, wait, that
is
guy.
This, is this Kyle Huttman?
This is Kyle Huttman. Yeah, this guy is just so cool. Like, he's just bopping around like, oh yeah, cool, recording stuff, sweet. And he'll just like pull his boom pole over and then just like press record on his mixer and just be like, all right, cool.
And like, that inspired you to pursue,
to be fair,
sound?
Sound designer or sound boom operators are generally cool.
They are just very cool. Yeah, they're just very cool people, let me tell you. So that entire shoot went by. It was a really great experience for me. And then I heard Kyle was doing the post sound for it too. And I'm like, yo, that's really cool. This cool guy's doing cool sound stuff. And I had just taken my first sound class in school. And I was like, oh my God, this is actually really cool. Like, does anyone know about this? Like, everyone else
what
wants to
so
be a
cool
director.
What was so cool about it to you?
You literally get to like build worlds. Like, I get to use vibrations to make people feel a certain way, and it's in a way that like music doesn't do that. It's I'm giving you information, I'm telling a story. Like, Joe went to the park. I could start, here's wind, there's a breeze blowing by, you know, you hear, it's not just the wind, it's not just whoosh, it's how it affects the trees and the leaves and everything.
It's a little bit more ominous.
It could be more ominous. Joe went to a dark park. But you can hear the of the footsteps, like the crunch in the leaves and the grass and the dirt, how that texture changes over time. And you know, maybe he's crying or something. He's just and like you can just have those sounds and I can create an atmosphere and make you, you know, one, tell a story and make you feel like, oh man, homeboy's sad, you know. Or it's like you're on a pirate ship.
To Joe.
Well, there was a pirate ship that popped out of nowhere on the...
At the park?
Yep, at the park.
Oh, my.
There was a river near the park. Pirate ship. And all the water's falling off. Anyway.
Wait, what do the pirates do? I'm invested.
Garrett!
Ahoy there, Joe! Would you like to join our crew?
Yes. Yes, I would. I've been waiting for something like this my entire life.
Well, hop aboard!
Of course.
And then we hear a sea shanty just in the distance.
Oh, hey ho, off the sea we go. It's she shanty, yes. Here we go, oh yes.
Perfect.
I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, you can like make stuff up on the spot, and I don't need visuals to be able to do that. And it's just, it's so more, it's way more creative because with a camera, like you, I am stuck in this box. Do you see this? Hold on. Box? This is the box.
Oh, I break out of mine all the time. Well. See? Michelle yes. hates when I do it.
Yes. I've been doing it this entire podcast. I'm very much, I talk with my hands
a lot. We're breaking free.
But there's something I can do, like, I can't demonstrate with this microphone, but, like, I could go to, you know, the left side, the right side of your ear. That's a whole another thing. So there's this big difference between sound editing and sound mixing. It's something I've been wanting to talk about.
Explain the difference between sound editing
yes.
and sound mixing.
The biggest difference between sound editing and sound mixing is a common question that comes up every year at the Oscars. And people are like, what's the difference? And this is where my cookie analogy comes in.
And you're saying that because there are two categories at the Oscars.
One Not anymore.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. I have to double check that.
I think they both exist. There might just not be televised.
That maybe? I don't know. Okay. We'll have well, to there check used to that. Be.
At yes. one point in time, there was two categories, one for sound mixing and yeah. one for sound editing.
Correct. So, sound editing. This is the part of how you make the cookie. What goes in the cookie? Not that. I'm so sorry.
Dough.
Dough. So, like, flour, sugar, eggs.
Chocolate chips.
Chocolate chips. I like this kind
oatmeal.
Of cookie.
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal. Okay. All right. We're getting somewhere.
Sugar.
Cinnamon.
Yes. Yeah, sugar. Yes. Cinnamon. Okay.
Butter.
But yeah, lots like butter. Of butter.
Let's make cookies.
I love this idea. Okay, so you have all these little things, all these layers. So in the world of sound, all of those things get layered on top of one another. That's that punch sound we were talking about. Remember?
The breeze sound.
Yeah, and then so you get here's your butter, and then this is the sugar coming in. So then sugar butter. And then the grunt is a whole nother thing. So when you add all those in, that creates this amazing, like, little story with the dough. And then mixing is my favorite part of the entire process.
Really? I didn't know that.
It is. That's the part I look forward to. Everyone loves Foley. It is my least favorite thing. Like,
editing.
It's not editing, it's just recording it. It's so
tedious. It's a lot of
I care too much, that's why. Because it's such a detailed information. Like, I want to make sure that this footstep sounds sad. Like, that's what I do. I get so particular about but with
Wait,
mixing.
We've had sad footsteps before in YouTube Rewind, the musical.
Yeah.
We had a Naruto run with a very sad, pathetic sounding
and it sounds
foot pattern.
Sad.
It does sound
like,
sad.
Like, if you think about it, that's like that.
So, you're laughing, but it's possible.
Exactly. I can make you feel from just footsteps alone. Anyway, so then mixing is just taking all these wonderful little elements, putting that oven on to 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 12 to 13 minutes. And you just watch it just all slowly rise and come together in that perfect little cookie and that warm gooiness that just tastes so amazing.
So why is mixing like that? What is sound
mixing? Because sound editing is what you hear. And sound mixing is how you hear it, how you experience it.
What are some examples of that?
Okay, so, you know you're watching a movie and there's a big dinosaur. You know, I'm not going to name the movie, but it rhymes with Jurassic.
Wow.
Jark. Anyway,
look up at the
dinosaurs. There's a giant dinosaur. Yeah. But the thing is, so here's the thing. You may not see that dinosaur on screen. So how you mix that is, where is this dinosaur? Where the heck is it behind you? Are you hearing... You know, and like, is it 10 feet away from you, or is it 100 feet away from you? Is it in another room entirely? Is it echoing in the jungle?
Do they move in herds?
Do they move in herds? They do.
They do move in herds.
Yeah, and then there are different formats of mixing too. So this podcast you're currently listening to is in stereo. Isn't that fun? Or it could also be mono, but most likely not. That's the doorbell.
That was the doorbell.
Wait, is that our food?
Probably.
If I did my job correctly, I sound mixed the doorbell so low that you don't hear it.
Let me go.
No. Now you'll hear it.
Where were we before we cut and Michelle now magically had
I think
food
I was talking. Yeah, I think
you
I was talking
about where the dinosaur is.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, hey, you have this dinosaur and it can come from anywhere. More specifically, if you want to talk about A Quiet Place, those creatures you don't see for a good chunk of the movie. And that's a lot of horror films or thrillers. They really try and rely on sound as much as possible because you're putting a mental image in your head. And I think that's scarier sometimes because you don't even know what this thing looks like, but it sounds terrifying.
There is something cool about, as a sound designer or editor in that sense, getting to, rather than art department this time, creating a very terrifying creature.
Yeah.
The sound person is creating the creature, which you wouldn't normally expect, but imagine Blair Witch Project and Cloverfield and A Quiet Place. All these movies
even
were
Jaws.
Yeah,
you don't
Jaws,
see
yeah.
The shark.
Where you don't see the horror element and you're only hearing it, and getting to do that job and building the creature, which is sound, is really cool.
You know what they use for the sound for that creature, though? It's very interesting.
Wait, which one?
For A Quiet Place.
Okay. What? I don't know this
Wait,
one.
What?
They took a grape, and then they took a taser, and then they tased the grape, and then slowed it down. So that's how you get that, like a clicking thing.
Oh, I totally hear that now.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, that makes so much sense.
So that's great
awesome.
Example.
How did they think of that?
But that I don't know. We just kind of take things and just go and like hope for the best, or like it's literally you try and make something vibrate in a different way. Like one of my favorite things, I have a guitar. Everyone's like, "You play guitar?" And I'm like, "No." I take a bowstring and I'll like play the guitar that way and send it through like different pedals and all of these sorts of plugins. And then I can make some crazy textures and ambiences. One of my favorite things actually was I took the sound of a trombone horn and then made it sound like this like underwater whale.
Whoa.
Wait, let me see if I can pull it up really quick because it's pretty cool.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's very
wait,
fun.
Wait, or send it to me and I'll play it.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
So if Christina remembers to send
I have
me the
this.
Sound.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so very there's cool. that, but then there's also the progression of it. So you can hear how I take it and then it's just like, take this one sound, take this sample, and now stretch it, and then make the pitch, do one of these doodads, stretch it some more, flip it, reverse it, let me work it, I can work it.
Wow. So you do a lot.
Yeah.
And when you're in mixing, you're also layering in the composer's work of the original score, if there is one.
Yes. Oh, so that's what I was talking about, too, is you're currently listening to this podcast in stereo, but there are other formats. There's 5.1 as well, and then there's Atmos. And Atmos mixing is a whole nother experience because what you're doing is you're not just sticking to two speakers. You know, I have a left and a right. But what Atmos does is it creates this environment like a cube around you in a movie theater. And I can say in this point on this grid, I want the sound of the spaceship to fly over your head so it really feels like it's just...
So that's why you pay a little bit more extra to get Atmos sound at a theater when theaters are open.
Yeah, it's a completely different experience. It's like some things about it are so subtle, but it really makes the world so like massive. It's amazing.
And I feel like people don't get it until it's gone. Until they don't have, they watch something without as robust sound. And you're like, man, something was missing from that.
Yeah, you don't notice good sound, but you notice bad sound. Yeah. And that's the bummer.
Yes.
No, it's really cool what it allows you to do. But then whenever you take the score on top of that, so typically, like, my part of the job is I'm giving you information. I'm telling you, you are, it's 1939. You're a hot detective in your office. It's raining.
Ooh.
Yeah. The case has just been opened. There's a broad out there. She's looking for a jewel. She lost it. Your papers have been completely scuttled around. You know, all these papers flying everywhere. And there's... Your door closes. There's now a guy standing there. And he's like, "Put stick your hands up!" And you're like, "Oh, no." Yeah. Anyway. But, like, it's really fun because what I'm doing is giving you information. The score, though, is giving you that spice, you know? Just like, oh, yeah. Be-do-do. Do-do-do-do.
The score is like that sense of mood and feeling.
Exactly.
Which sound does, too.
It does, but what I'm doing is providing the context and that score. You know, you hear two notes in Jaws. Dun-dun. And you know exactly what that means. You know, there's a shark coming. You know, or if you're playing Fortnite, that's a different sound. That shark's coming, and then when it comes, oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, video games have a ton of sound design.
And what's really cool about those is they're taking samples, and you have, like, here's a sci-fi gun, and every time you use that, you're playing a very specific type of sound, but it has to change enough over time, otherwise, you know, it starts to seem like it is a little too dull, but it's like, you know, the sound if you get a certain thing of loot or like a rupee in a very specific game. It's just like bling, like, okay, I have acquired a thing, you know. And it's just like all these sounds are so satisfying, and they alert us of different information. But yeah, anyway, let's talk about...
I want to hop back to... So you were telling a story about how you worked on a feature as in the art department.
Oh my God, we're so far off.
I know.
And you saw a boom operator that was a cool guy.
Yes.
And this got you started... Like, you just went for it? Like, so in college, what happened after that?
How we got way off track. Because we were like, what made you interested in sound in the first place? And all of that happened.
So now that you're interested in sound...
Yes.
I want to know... And we can go from, like, the point of leaving school with your golden ticket. You've got a degree. Yes.
Well, it wasn't even that. No, so this was before that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. She's
taking her post.
Right. Yeah.
So I took my first sound class, and then cue, like, half an hour of a sidetrack. Sorry about that. Anyway, we're back. So after I... was on that production. It was so much fun. I had just taken my first sound class, and I was like, whoa, this is cool. And I just got so involved in that world, and it was just, like, so new to me. One, two, everyone else wanted to be a director, and it was just like, well, I don't have interest in that. I want to tell stories in a different way, and was able to be one of the few people that actually took sound at my school. So everyone was just, like, sliding hard drives under the door at one point. I was, like, hogging the studio space. I was like, yeah, just slide your hard drive on the door. I'll get it back to you in 3 days' time. And I just practiced over and over and over again. And Mark and Madeline approached me, and they're like, hey, just want to reach out to you and just say, like, thank you so much for being on our shoot. It was so much fun having you. Like, we noticed you put 110% into a job that you don't know anything about, and you killed it. What do you actually want to do? And I was like, I'd love to do post sound at some point in life. And they're like, well, here's the thing. Kyle, unfortunately, has to pass up on part of the project here because something big came up for him, and he, like, couldn't, he had to like take that. He couldn't turn it down. And they're like, we are actually looking for someone to do post sound on our feature film. He did a good chunk of it already. He did most of the dialogue editorial. But how do you feel about taking this type of project on? And I'm, again, sophomore in college. And I'm like, sure.
This is a feature film.
This is, yes.
So this is a big deal for this a college student.
Yeah.
This is a big boy. And I did. I took that project on. Also, this is when I'm in Pittsburgh and they're in California. They're in Los Angeles. So I'm operating at a very weird schedule because I'm trying to accommodate to their time zone.
Yeah,
so
you're
I'm
3 hours
up.
Ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm still trying to be up at like 6 a.m. just to make sure that they have something at 7 a.m. their time to like start to look at to give me notes. And I was doing what we do for features. We break things up into reels. So one reel is about 12 to 15-ish minutes. So you're not doing an entire feature and losing your mind. But yeah, I did that for about a month and a half or so.
Wow.
And that was the first time I was learning anything about like 5.1 sound and all that mixing. And like it was just a very daunting project, to say the least. And this was also the same time that I was like doing Milkman and doing my own personal like film projects that were going to make or break me as a filmmaker, I guess, because that's kind of the program was designed in a very interesting way. But yeah, so I was doing all of this at once, and I like just didn't sleep at all. I was just like a sponge taking all this information in, and I completed it. And it's now on iTunes currently. Yeah, anyone can check it out. It's called Cardinal Matter. And it's just a really cool film. And honestly, like looking back at it, I mean, there's definitely, you learn, you grow over time, but I'm like, it still holds up pretty well. Like,
so your first project as a sound mixer was a feature film, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because of that, I just made really great relationships on that set. I met a lot of amazing people. And by the time I graduated, the first thing I did was start reaching out to some of them. Like, I reached out to Kyle, and he's like, hey, so I'm on this really big show right now, and I can't work for any of my usual clients. Do you want them? And here's my sound kit. So he literally handed me his sound kit, like boom, mixing bag, everything, all these extra like little tools, all these little like lavaliers and like tape and scissors, whatever I can need. And it's like, okay, here's a client, the smaller one, HGTV. Have you heard of them? They have this like small thing. It's fine. And so like, here I am doing an entire pilot for a show for HGTV, and it's now, I'm pretty sure it's still going. It's called Restored by the Fords. Super cute brother-sister duo. And that was like one of my first jobs outside of college. And then I got another job working for Allegheny Health Network, which is a hospital in Pittsburgh. And it was like a month-long shoot. And it was one time I sat in on a hip surgery and was recording sound for that. It was a very interesting experience.
Well, what I think is really admirable and what other people can learn from your experience is that, first of all, you were very upfront about what you wanted to do. Like, you were honest with Mark and Madeline when you said,
yeah,
I want to do this. And you were not shy away at all from doing hard work right out the gate.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't something that you wanted to do.
Well, that's
the thing. It was like you were willing to go all in on something that
waking up super early.
Just to prove that you can do it and you have the work ethic, and then still be upfront. But this is the thing that I do want to do. So when that opportunity arises, I want to prove myself for that opportunity.
Yeah. And you were also smart to see it as an exciting and educational opportunity and know, like, this is going to be hard work, but I'm going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
And then to also go from that to, like, you know, like you said, filming random hospital surgeries, which isn't, you know, I don't know if any filmmaker's like, I want to do that when I grow up.
You know, honestly, yeah, it was an interesting experience. But I'm the kind of person that I saw an opportunity, and I'm not, one thing, if I can offer one piece of advice, it's this. Every relationship I made with somebody was not because I wanted to get something out of it work-wise. It was, I truly enjoy this person's way of storytelling. This is someone I would love to hang out with around a campfire talking about whatever story that is. I'm not approaching them and saying, hi, here's my resume. I qualify for your job.
Yeah.
I never do that.
People really push that second mindset of like, meet as many people as you can, network, network, network. And I feel like I did some of that when I first moved to LA, and I was like, sure. I hate this.
Everyone
does.
It's not
fun. Nobody likes it.
Why are we doing it?
No one likes to be on the receiving end of it.
My takeaway is that, Christina, you did a lot of genuine networking.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the film industry, networking is huge.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
All of your jobs are going to come from people that you've met. But what I really like about this approach is that it was the relationship first, job second. And that way, it built a genuine connection between these two people. Also, in general, you just want to work with people that you like.
Yeah.
And so just, I don't know, I respect that approach. And it was definitely one of the things that got you your having that relationship with Kyle, that boom operator, then got you one job, and then you maybe meet somebody on that set, which then will get you another job,
yeah.
And you meet somebody on that next set.
During all of that too, Garrett was constantly calling me. He's like, Christina, you have to come to LA like ASAP, please.
I tried to get you out here so
I think you
times.
Called me six times. Yeah. And then there was one time, here's the thing, I gave myself a goal of about a year and a half after I graduated college, like, okay, that's when you can go to LA. Like, just use this time right now to save up as much as you can, and, you know, you'll eventually get out there. But Kyle really kind of put me on this fast track because his relationships, the people he's already established connections with, you know, he's like, here, this is someone filling in for me for a year. And I'm not taking any work away from him. I'm helping him maintain those clients. So he's now back with some of them, which is awesome. And I just feel honored that it was a great experience and learning opportunity for me. But because he did that, I was able to fast track. And so Garrett's like, you know, call number seven. And I was like, okay. And he's like, wait, okay, hold on. But like, for real, it'd be great. Also, there's this person you have to meet. Her name's Michelle. She's really awesome. Like, every phone call, he was talking about you. It was so, so great.
Really?
I was very excited. Yes. I'm not exaggerating. Yes. And I'm like, okay, whoever this Michelle character is, like, she's obviously really awesome because everyone Garrett's worked with before in the past, like, I always love hanging out with and making movies with, because that's just it. It's like, I love working with my friends so much. And then when Garrett's like, hey, you, my friend, come work, I have things and friendship too. And I was like, aw.
And you just have such a great energy on set and otherwise. And I feel like you give 110% every time, even though, like, you literally go from mixing a Quiet Place trailer or Bumblebee trailer, whatever it is, to my stuff and bring that same level of excitement and professionalism, and it's really special to get to
thank you
work with that.
Yeah, but the way I see it too is like, no project, I don't care how much money it has, no project has any higher authority of another as far in terms of creativity. There's no reason why I should not be as creative on your projects. If anything, it encourages me to be more creative because it's a smaller team and everyone is so willing to, you know, hey, how can we make the best product possible? Whereas some of these bigger films, that you're part of a team, you're part of a very specific group of people, and this is the task you're doing. And it's very fun. Like, I love doing that too, because it's like, oh my god, like, I did that. I was a part of a big movie. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, but I think it comes down to, you know, in an effort to not, like, I don't want anyone to feel like they need to self-sacrifice too much or be even taken advantage of.
Yeah.
The point is, you seek out people you like working with.
Yeah.
In all aspects.
That is a core value of mine. That is one thing. Like, if I like you as a human being, like, if I think you're a really awesome person, like, I'm going to want to work with you regardless of the circumstance or the situation. And, like, when I moved out to L.A., I burned through all of my savings.
So that's what I was going to ask you.
I
call you, you get to LA.
Yep.
What happens? How do we get from moving to LA to working for Cabin because, like, was it difficult? Did you immediately start getting work? Yeah. I want to know about what that was. Yeah. It a year before that happened?
It was about a year. So
tell us about that year.
Yeah, so that was a really difficult year. That was the first time. I've never been that far away from home. I've never lived on the West Coast. There's no snow. Like, sorry. I apparently had an alarm set for 12:45 to wake up.
To wake up.
You're up.
I'm up. Sorry about that.
You never live it on the West Coast. There's no snow.
There's no snow. I mean, there's snow. You can access snow here. But, like, it's not, like, there. I have to go out of my way for snow or rain. But when I first moved, I remember actually it was raining. It was pouring. And you and Kevin were helping us try and take a refrigerator out.
When Christina moved here and Kevin, I was like, I just asked Kevin, like, hey, what are you doing today or something? And he's like, oh, I'm helping my friend Christina move in. She's from Point Park, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. I was like, oh, my God, you guys need to get together.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow. Yeah. She seems like a perfect match for you, Kevin.
Because he was...
Little did I know.
Yeah.
I never met her before.
I'm gay. but Kevin and I had a really great friendship, and he also taught me Steadicam. Because that was another thing I was doing.
Steadicam operating.
I didn't even talk about that at all. I do a little bit of everything. I did a lot of producing in college. I did a lot of camera operating, sound, obviously art direction. But no, so when I first moved out, I didn't have any jobs lined up. And I was like, okay. Well, Garrett said he had something, and now it's not there. Something fell through. That's okay. And then it's like, don't let the panic sink in. Okay, cool.
Yeah, because a lot of people think, you know, you excel at your college or in your hometown, yeah, at whatever thing you want to pursue, directing, producing, acting, whatever it is. And you get to LA and you think, this is my next step and my trajectory will be just as steep and just the same.
By 25, I will be a billionaire. Like, yeah, that's what everyone assumes.
Yeah, no.
But you essentially,
like, you literally
over.
Move here.
Yep.
You get your apartment set up and you're like, what do I do now? Like, yeah, there is definitely some of that.
Yeah.
It's very real.
It was a very humbling experience. That's the best way I can explain it. It was the most humbling experience because all I did was the same stuff I was doing back at home. Like, here's a really small indie project. It's a 3-minute short film my buddies and I shot. There's, like, no money involved. Or, like, here's a podcast I'm starting up. Again, no money involved. And it's like, I'm barely able to make rent at this point. And I'm like, don't let the panic sink in. But Garrett said something, actually, to somebody else, and I was there. I don't know. But you said that your job, when you don't have a job, especially in Los Angeles, is to go and try and find one, or make yourself the best person you can be for when that job does come around, and to network. And I really, like, took that to heart of, like, okay, I don't have a job right now, but that means what I'm going to do is I'm taking this day to drive around and actually learn Los Angeles. I've never been here before. And so if someone says, hey, I do have a job for you, it's in Santa Monica. I actually know how to get there. I know where Santa Monica is.
Yeah, it sounds so simple, but it's important.
It is, yeah. And then I met with a bunch of people, and I was surprised when I moved out here. Because you kind of start making this list of who do I actually know that lives in Los Angeles? I don't have any family. I have one uncle in Las Vegas, and I love him to death. Like, Uncle Dave, the coolest guy in the world.
Shout out to Uncle Dave.
Shout out to Uncle Dave. I love you. And everyone I knew was from Point Park. And I was like, wait a second. And I'm, like, counting my list, and I'm like, I know 60 people out here. Like, not a lot of people can say that,
yeah.
I feel like, especially coming from the network. East Coast and from Point Park University. Like, that's like, I didn't even hear that school when I went. Like, my mom's like, oh, here's a school. Because when I was looking, I was looking at, like, Penn State or, you know, literally all the colleges here in California. I was looking at Full Sail in Florida. And my mom's like, how about Point Park University? And I'm like, what the heck's a Point Park? And I went there. So that was the only school I applied to as well. I didn't apply anywhere else. I was just like, yeah, cool. Because, I don't know, I just feel like the kind of person that when something's meant to happen, you just kind of do it. And when an opportunity presents itself, like, go for it. And what happened was I was meeting up with a couple of different alumni, and everyone I was talking with, you know, just catching up, like, oh, man, it's been a minute since that feature film. Like, oh, you're not doing art direction? No, no. That was always a funny conversation. And everyone's like, you need to meet this girl, Eileen. Like, you need to meet Eileen. And I'm like, okay, who's this mysterious Eileen? Like, she sounds really awesome. And eventually I got to meet up with her. And she, like, she was the coolest person I've ever met. Like, she went to Point Park. She was the only other sound person that I knew, because everyone else was doing, like, editing specifically. And other people that I also knew, like, they were, oh, I am directing, but I don't really have anything at the moment. Or, you know, I'm working somewhere else. And I met Eileen, and she was like a re-recording mixer at a post sound house. And I was like, in a year, my goal is to try and get into a post sound house, even if it's just like, I'll be a runner, I'll go get people's coffees, whatever it is. And so I met up with her, and it was just like, I've heard your name so many times, and I'm pretty sure I've seen you around school, but like, because she would have been a senior when I was a freshman. And I saw a couple other people around school, and they just, you know, I had a couple more interactions with them. And then so getting to meet her and actually having those conversations was great. And of course, you know, you're meeting up with these people, and you're obviously looking for work, for a job. And but like, I didn't do it in a way of again, like, here's my resume, I'm looking for a job. And, you know, it got to that point in the conversation of like, okay, cool, we've been talking for an hour. And she's like, are you looking for work? I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. And she's like, well, I'm actually leaving my job. Do you want my job? And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I'm a re-recording mixer at a post sound facility, Cabin 21 Sound. They're looking for a new re-recording mixer. I don't know anything about you, but I know the people you hang around with. And those are people, like, I've never met people that work harder than them. So, like, if they do good, you're going to do good. And so she set up this whole interview process for me. I don't even know if I gave them a resume. I think I did. But, like, I got lunch with them one day, and they were like, yeah, cool, you're in. And they got me as a re-recording mixer. And typically, people my age start as like an assistant, and like I was an assistant for 2 weeks to learn that process, and I kind of shifted from like 2 weeks to then fast track to being a re-recording mixer. Everyone else I know that does that is well more experienced than me.
What did you say is the average age for someone who has your job?
It's really hard to say because the job I have spreads to so many different groups of people, but I've seen people who are in their 40s and higher in that job. And I got hired when I was 23 24, so it is pretty great to like feel that I'm in the position that I'm at such a young age, and I'm so thankful for it every day. Because I still, in a way, like, don't feel like I deserve it, but I work so hard.
You do.
Every time I'm there. Because being a mixer, too, is very different from an editor. So a sound editor, you're working usually with a team of people. Okay, you're covering Foley. You're great. Doing backgrounds.
Yay.
Cool. Go, team. Go. And then you guys give that to me. And then I start mixing that. I'm the one that's in the hot seat then when the executives and the director come by and they say, I don't like that sound.
But you didn't even put the sound in.
Doesn't matter.
She's team leader.
Yeah.
Tina leader.
Yeah. So it is.
Because you're like on you are the working phone with Paramount executives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who give you feedback.
Yeah. And
that's
and
terrifying.
I usually,
that's freaking terrifying.
Yes, it is. And I also usually get less than an hour with the content. So there's that too. So it's definitely, I like to say it is a very great job, but it's not for the faint of heart. And I've made a couple of mistakes here and there, but I've definitely learned my lesson, you know, and I think it's made me a better mixer. And the fact that I get to go in and do one job for the entirety of the day is amazing. Because whenever I do your projects, I'm doing everything. Yeah, and it can't, it's pretty exhausting after a while, because it's like, okay, I have to wear so many different hats. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're just mixing, you're kind of just like, all right, cool. It's not just like moving the dials and you're like, all right, everything's cool.
DJ Tina.
Yeah, I'm just DJ. It's fine. All the buttons on the board do absolutely nothing. It's just for looks. No, it's definitely, it's a really tricky process, because it is so specific, and it's stuff that I feel like people wouldn't notice until they notice it.
I feel like the big takeaways were: surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Build meaningful relationships and never stop working hard at what you are doing.
Relationship even now, first, job second.
Yeah, because even now, you are always putting your full self into everything you do, no matter how big or small the project is. That shows people recognize that and want to continue to work with somebody like that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And someone's asked me, I think I saw this on the Discord actually, someone asked what my dream job would be. And honestly, I would love at some point to work on a big feature blockbuster film that me and my friends make.
Yeah.
And like be able to do that on like an industry level, but it's just us, you know, to like be a part of that next generation. I don't even care what the project is. Like that's my dream. So anytime I get to hang out with you guys, it's so much fun, and I've really been enjoying just like streaming with you on Twitch, and it's like, wait, that's a whole nother medium, a whole nother platform. And so I kind of always keep my options open in case, you know, a pandemic happens and we're all out of work.
Right.
Because there's nothing happening in the entertainment industry.
Another shameless plug for our Twitch account. Follow us on Twitch.
And follow Tina on Twitch at SoundShield Maiden.
Yes.
Follow Tina. Tina is a part of Alpha Team Bravo. We already said this. I'm saying it again.
Heck yeah.
We play games together on Twitch all the time.
So
three
fun.
3 times a week. And it's a great time. So if you enjoy this conversation, we've been having some of these style deeper conversations on the streams, which has been really awesome.
Yeah.
So if you want more of this, follow us at all of those things
below in the show notes and description.
So I want to keep talking, but we have to stop the podcast. One, because it's getting long, and two, because we have other things we need to
hungry.
Do today.
Yes.
And
three, I'm Christina.
Well, Christina, thank you so much for being here today with us. We're so grateful to have you as a friend and collaborative partner, but friend first always. Everyone, be sure to follow Christina on Instagram and on Twitch at SoundShield Maiden. And if you made it to the end of this podcast, congratulations, mission accomplished.
Oh my God, is that the thing you say? I love that.
Have you seen this podcast?
I haven't watched the end part of any of them.
Well, there you go.
Wow. I'm sorry, I'm a terrible friend.